hardship to get to them. Yet Rashi, on more than 10 occasions, shows that the intention of the brothers is to find Yosef, or at least to do kapara for Yosef. They have plenty of food. They're going down to do kapara for Yosef. That's a pshat. Not on each individual pasuk, perhaps, but given an overall framework, the pshuto lokim ashma'o there. But in the overall framework, and now I'll reveal to you an essential, crucial statement in the study of pshat and drash. Don't ever forget it. The drash of the drash is the pshat. The drash of the drash is very often the pshat. I'll use it that way. So that is the deeper meaning of the deeper meaning will be the overall framework. And remember, we're talking here about, we're not talking Shakespeare. We're talking a book we want to analyze every single pintle. I saw every single pintle. Okay, well, that's something we spoke about before you came, about the Malbim. I must say that Rashi, based on the studies of Rashi, the Meforshim of Rashi, would not say that Drash equals Pshat. There's some Meforshim of Rashi that feel that way, but I think Rashi would say here is Drash, here is Pshat. They're not at odds with each other, but they're two different ways to approach. The Malbim would say Drash equals Pshat. In other words, B'nei B'chori Yisrael, that's the Pshat. They're too Pshatim to this puzzle. Anachonami. Because the Torah wants us to enhance our lives and live the best positive, and that's derived much more from Drash than Pshat. So two other questions in order that I saw them. I'm sorry. But, yes.
I don't remember the source, but I will turn this remarkable twist. Ein hamikra yosef midei pshat. The full significance of a verb does not emerge from the pshat alone. There is much more to the mikra than the pshat.
I have it here. If I may, I believe it's Hagdama of the Ramban, where he shows the difference between ein mikra yosef midei pshuto and if the Maamar Chazal would have been, which we can all agree, we know it's not, and would have been wrong to be, Ein Mikra Ela Kipshuto. Ein Mikra Yosei Midei Pshuto, as the Gra also explains in the Zagdama to Shir Shirim. So I believe it's the Zagdama of the Ramban to the Torah and or the Gra to Shir Shirim. And it's an essential rule for us to appreciate. Drash is certainly a third category according to Rashi, I'm saying. It's not necessarily according to other Meforshim.
Drash is... I understand.
It's very simple. Drash is a synonym in the Torah to Chakira, Drisha v'Chakira. A drash is a deeper... Pshat scrapes the surface. Pshat is lahavshit. Lahavshit is to skin an animal, so pshat gets the skin, and drash goes deeper. No one's going to accuse Hashem Yilochem Lochem Batem Tacharishun, meaning God will make bread for you if you plow, to be the pshat. I mean, I can give many, many other examples. It feels good. It's a good drush. You could stay in the shul, but that's the Indian. Okay, I turn to where it says, page 7, number 5, source 49, that the homily is an essential tool of Rashi in his Perush. I don't have to teach anyone here this, so I'm skipping all of these. You could just look at how Rashi runs through this. I imagine all Rabbonim here quote from Rashi more often than Rashbam. How many drushes have you made out of Rashbam? The fact is, I'm looking at Rabbi Schoenfeld now, just because I used to daven in the shul when I was younger, and actually at the bottom of this page is a drush I once heard from you from the Rashbam. So, drusha based on the Rashbam. Very rarely does a Rav come into shul and say, Rashbam says, please take a drusha this week. That happens to be on Sukkah, on the meaning behind the Sukkah. The Rashbam says a very nice drusha, and it's uncharacteristic of Rashbam. The way he weaves in and out of homily, it's not his derech. Rashbam thought homily was an important thing, and he said, leave it for your Musar book. Don't put it in your Perush al Torah. I would say on the pasuk by Yikach me'avnei hamakom, where Rashi insists that, like the Gemara in Kulin teaches, that there were many stones in the beginning of the night and one Yikach me'avnei hamakom afterwards. So the Taisvus on the Daf in Kulin says lav davka, as Rashbam says in his Perush, it could be Vayikach Evin me'avnei hamakom. So that's what I said before, the philosophical idea of not solving a problem, but showing that there is no problem. So and the fact is that Rav Velvel wrote in his Perush of the Torah that, I'm sorry, that the Taisvus didn't catch what Rashi at least saw in the pasuk. It's not Vayikach me'avnei hamakom that teaches there were many stones in the beginning of the night. Look at Rashi's Dibro Maschil when he brings this down. It's Vayotze Mirash Yosav. Rashi knows Vayikach me'avnei hamakom can be read Vayikach Evan me'avnei hamakom, but Vayotze Mirash Yosav can either mean he put them around his head or under his head. Read the first words in Rashi. Asa'on kimin marzeib saviv l'rosho. Mirash Yosav means around his head. You can't put one rock around your head. So anyway, Rashi insists that there's one rock in the beginning of the night, and Rashi has it both ways, because in Parsha Shlach, when it says that the Meraglim Vayikchu min harimonim u'min ha-te'inim, Rashi says, remember, only one of each. So Rashi, if you want to insist that Vayikach me'avnei hamakom, it should have said Vayikach Evan me'hamakom. Why didn't it say in the Torah Vayikach rimon u'te'ina? Say it like it is. Why did the Torah have to say min harimonim u'min ha-te'inim? So you see, in Parsha Shlach, the Torah wants to let us know that this is not the only one like this. This is one of many that was so big. But in Parsha Vayetze, what does the Torah have to tell me? Vayikach me'avnei hamakom if you only took one. And then Vayotze Mirash Yosav. So Rashi wants to teach you, get close to a tzaddik. Even if you have to learn from rocks. There's a Rashi in this week's Parsha that we learn from rocks, right? So the Rashi wants to teach you, it's the way of the Torah. The Torah by writing Vayikach me'avnei hamakom, Vayotze Mirash Yosav, is a message to people, Ledoros, get close to a tzaddik. Rashbam says, what? Put that in your mutter book. Don't put that in your perush, pshat, perush al Torah, Rashi. Take out those words pshat from your perush if this is what you're going to write. Rashi says, I'm sorry. This may not be pshat, but it is the vor zavur al ofanov. So I'm going to record it, and, by the way, I'm going to teach my readers their herets along the way, lessons in life along the way. You think that you know, Rashi was ridiculed for writing on the pasuk by Yerkiveim al hachamor. Remember what Rashi writes in that pasuk? Why didn't say Yerkiveim al hamor? Yerkiveim al hachamor, the special donkey. Same one that Avram used, and the same one that Moshiach is destined to use. Everyone used to cry gevalt on Rashi. Rashi thinks that there's a 3,000-year-old donkey someplace in the world waiting for Moshiach. And it's still around there. What's this Rashi doing? So there are some of Farshi Rashi who say Rashi didn't mean to say that this donkey is necessarily so old. Rashi just means to say I want to tie in, because of extra hay, certain historical events involving donkeys, which can teach us that if we have the same Mesiras Nefesh today that Moshe had when taking B'nai Yisrael to Mitzrayim, or Abraham had with the Akedah, then Mashiach is bound to come. The most important single historical event in every Medrash, I submit to you, is Bias HaMashiach. The purpose of many of these Midrashim is to give us hope. You have to look in Medrash Rabbah to see the Makoros before you rush to Rashi and see what was Rashi's homily. But you have the purpose of these Makoros is to give hope in a hopeless time. Most of these Midrashim were written at a time of tremendous pressure for Jews. And the reading of these Midrashim gave them great hope for the future. So that many of these Rashis gave a shot bent to these Drushas, and why Rashi was so popular over the ages. Why there were 300 Perushim to Rashi. And Rashbam sat in a jar for 750 years. Why Ibn Ezra was never so popular. And that's so many Kisvei Yad to Ibn Ezra. So many to Rashi, so many Perushim to Rashi, just for this reason. I told you I would say a word about Rashi's use of Targum. I have to do this very quickly. You all know the Gemara. If a man says to a woman, Harayat Mekudeshus Le'amanash Shani Karyana, he has to read 3 psukim and give Targum to 3 psukim. The Gemara concludes that the Targum must be Targum Unkulus, and he cannot give his own free translation, because then he'll be possibly Mechare from Agadez and Vidai and violate his rules of sticking to the Chazal's definitions and not explaining a Pasuk Kitsu Rasso. So Rashi, in his Perush to Kiddushin, there, and Daf Mem says, this is source number 58-59, volunteers an example. The Pasuk Lo Sa'ane Al Riv. You know, in the Mesorah, the Pasuk is spelled Resh Beis. If you're not prepared with the laying, you'll read Lo Sa'ane Al Rav. And there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that darshans as if though the word is not din, but rav. And that's the Targum also. So Rashi says that this is the din and nefashos involved here. Right? The man gets up there, he leans the three psukim properly, he says all three psukim like Targum also, but he translates riv as lotatid alzina. Kitzurato. In the Mekadeshis, because he didn't keep the Targum Bidon, he didn't keep the Targum Ungulus. So Rashi used his bread. Gemara didn't give an example of how to use Targum. Rashi volunteered the example of Lotan El Riv. Why is this so significant? Because if you look at Rashi on the Pasuk in his Perush Al HaTorah, Rashi disagrees with this Ungulus. He says this is not a Charyishu HaMikra. So Rashi, why did you have to give us an example? You volunteered the example in Kedushin of where the pshat of a pasuk is not like Unkelus. Why did you have to give one where you're against Targum? Why didn't you give Birchos Hadayim Barechem as the example? Where you said like Targum against the pshat. So I submit to you, like I said before, pshat is what the pasuk says, drash is what the pasuk teaches. It's very important, especially Mechanchim and Yeshiva. When a student gets up and says, Rebbe, is this what this is the meaning of the pasuk? Remember the Gemara in Gittin Daf Zion, where there was a certain Amora who was able to learn any drasha, even from the names of the cities in Sefer Yehoshua? Remember Kino Dimona Adodei? Remember he said, okay, take this pasuk. And he right away he rattled off a beautiful drasha based on the cities. Okay, there were these people who are fine. They make drushes out of what seems to be thin air. The names of the cities in Yehoshua, Pshat and Drash, are names of cities. What are you doing? So, I would like to submit to you, again, it's very important to mention this, Mechanchim, is to, whenever a student asks this question, Rebbe, does the Pasuk really teach this? You say, Zichler, 100%. Why? Because an Amora said so, a Tana said so, a Tazema said so. Of course the Pasuk teaches this. Does the Pasuk Lo Tzaneh Al Riv teach Lo Tzaneh Al Rav? Yes. Why? Because Targum says so. Or Gemara says so. Does the Pshat of the Pasuk teach this? No. Remember Rashi at the beginning of Perek Chelek says, HaKofer B'Midrashim Eilu, Ein Lo Chelek Olam Haba. You have to believe that not only Chesameitim in the Torah. Rashi says, what do you mean in the Torah? Drashim Eilu. And Rashi in his Perush Al HaTorah seems to disagree with one of those drushes. So you ask, does Hinchos Shochevim Avasecha become Ha'amazev as another teach Chiyas HaMeisim? The answer is Zichr, except to today by Bishmael. But Zichr it teaches. Why? Because the Gemara says so. Does the Pshat teach that? No. Rashi is a Pshat Perush. The Perush he gives must fit the words, and if it doesn't, Rashi will not give it. He may agree that that's what the Pasuk teaches. That's an important essence. I can move on and on and on. The Rambam proves in the Mishnah and in Darim that that's not the case, but I'll leave it at that. Rashi apparently was. The Gemara Megillah says that Chagai is Chari Malachi. He had a Mesor of Chagai is Chari Malachi based on the Gemara Brachas that the Nevi'im were given at Sinai, maybe through that. I understand. So when Rashi disagrees with Unkelus on the more than 100 over 100 occasions, it doesn't mean I think that Unkelus is wrong. I don't want to say the word. It means Unkelus is not pshat here. That's all. I'd say that. I would like to conclude. I'll take some of your questions. I'd like to conclude my words with a Gemara in Brachas that says that when Hashem told Moshe daber no ba'oznei ha'am, Hashem had to beg permission. He had to say, please, if I can show him. Now, Hashem is not in the habit of asking permission or begging Moshe to do things. He commands. So, you know, the Gemara said that Moshe really didn't want to do this. Hashem had to say, because those tzaddik will get upset if you don't get this money. Say, so the Mefarshim to the Gemara, there, the Marshah, the Mefarshim to Rashi, has this kasha, because Rashi brings it down. His Perush Al HaTorah says, no, Hashem, aren't you supposed to keep your promise because that's the right thing to do? The fact is, the way we know Avraham, he's not likely to complain like this. So Hashem, you should keep your promise because you've said, so keep your promise. So the Mefarshim answer that really when Hashem said Acharei Chenis to Bechush Gadol, what did he mean? Meant the Torah. Even Pshat Mefarshim, even Ezra says that Bechush Gadol means Eretz Yisrael. And Yesu means they should leave Egypt. They didn't leave Egypt with the Torah or Eretz Yisrael. They left with a deed to the Torah. They left owning the Torah, owning Eretz Yisrael. All right, no, but Hashem really meant you will leave Mitzrayim owning a Torah, owning something great. That's the Rechush Gadol. But you know what? Abraham thought I meant money. I could be a Mitzachem Nesechel Tov Be'enei Adam if I only give them Torah and Eretz Yisrael with no money. But Abraham, with good intentions, read the Pasuk to mean not money. All right, you know the drasha. So it becomes in Torah. So we should hopefully teach our balabasim, our talmidim, that the rule is you're a shemayim. You should know your grammar, know your syntax, know your context, know your rules to fit pshat. But if it looks like a davar davar lo fanav and it fits, teach the balabasim how to appreciate a good piece of Torah. And please, on your own, look at what the Ramban writes, not only in his Akdama to the Torah, which can't be understood without his Akdama to the Mechamos, and I underline the important portions to read, and you'll appreciate this point of the Chiyuv, of teaching our Balabatim how to appreciate good Pshat and good Drash. And again, I apologize for the shortness of time, because I would love to have some dialogue on this. Appreciate your attention. Thank you.
If anyone wants to speak with Rabbi Schwartz, we invite you to the shul. We must begin the next session now. Rabbi Schwartz, right next door, if you want to spend a few minutes, call a kavod.
My original copy is in the
back.
Okay, so what do you suggest? This resolution. Yes? Yeah, right. Well, here's what I sent out the release yesterday in an address, which is yet to be. Denounced proposals to compromise the integrity of Jerusalem. Rabbi Grala condemned Israeli leaders for putting Jerusalem into a negotiating position. Any attempt to yield sovereignty to, or even to share sovereignty with, the Arabs is an outright betrayal of Israel's historic rights. It is immoral to negotiate the way East Jerusalem conquered by Israel in a defensive war provoked by the Arabs. All right, so say
liberate.
The victory was won only after heavy losses of lives of Israeli soldiers. We call upon the leaders of the Israeli government to renounce any secret deals and letters sent to Arab leaders or to intermediaries, and to affirm unequivocally, without qualification, the unity of Jerusalem to remain solely under the sovereignty of Israel.
Well, that's our resolution on Jerusalem.
You can sit down.
That is a very wonderful statement.
need to go one step further. The Israeli council of facts to the many.
I know that, but
the Rabin says Arab is a great liar. How do you negotiate with a liar? And I think it's what's the moment.
That's the answer.
But I read the statement in your statement. You don't understand. In the statement, Rabin called Arafat three times a liar. And how do you negotiate with a liar? I think we should talk to them Israel. To break our negotiations altogether.
We can't do that.
We can't.
Well, you can't do it because, first of all, Rabin's a big liar. And Peres is a big liar. You deal with liars all the time.
We are calling a number of people liars.
Can't hear you.
Otherwise, we'll tear our own membership apart.
Thank you.
by the fact that Rabbi Shalter, by the fact that you and I are on the right there, person in the room. We take all that into consideration. Just to... Resolution, violence, dash, gun control. Move. They tested it, so that we should connect.
We already have a resolution. No, I think after the Trump resolution, we can put that in hand. What did our students talk about? What's my suggestion?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I know. Despite some differences in the Orthodox community which occasionally divide us, the mutual observance and allegiance of Torah Halacha unifies us permanently. Thus, the RCA applauds the North American Leadership Conference of November 4th and efforts to unite the Jewish community and to create better cooperation amongst its various groups. The RCA favors continued efforts to provide a stronger Orthodox voice, taking these elements in the Jewish and general communities. In addition, the United Orthodox will enable us to move to more effectively use our talents and resources to foster our core ideals. Rabbi Pollan and then Rabbi Sulker. And then they have committees or commissions and so forth. Yes. It's already working. It's in the process of it. It's in the process. Rabbi Hochberg.
Thank you.
What time did she arrive in the Himalayan Authentic? What, by Poland? Then we should broaden the scope and universalize it. But once and for all, we got to take a stand. I mean, just because they didn't like it because they didn't get, and they weren't the leaders in it. I mean, let's not get involved with that. We have made an effort. We have put money into it. We had a most successful conference. It wasn't universal enough. So that's what we're seeing here. We want to try to run this. I agree with you. No choice or right.
Reach out a little more, stronger language. That's what the baby was saying. That's what I'm like doing.
No. We're not going into the politics now. If you want, we'll give you a special session on the politics. We're trying to create a sense of unity, a working relationship. We are facing assimilation in this country. We're facing assimilation in our betrayal. And each one is concerned about his own self-interest. Let's do something. Let's get together on some issues. We made an effort already. It wasn't totally successful, but steps were taken. So what are we afraid to take a stand already? Yes. Well, they canceled. You're a psychologist.
Incorporated as a resolution.
That was sent out to you at this point. Yeah, you know, how you like that? Yeah. Maybe putting a resolution second. One other resolution, and I have to propose this particular resolution. I was asked by someone, you know, there are a series what they've been in the country. They issue people with all kinds of suggested materials, which are rejected by genuine Buffet Dean. The individual would like us to put a resolution, a certain resolution, either denouncing the issuing of people by non-authorized Buffet Dean, or calling upon the authorized community to be cautious or careful regarding the issuance of GPS. Yes. Rabbi Shapiro, Rabbi Gordon, and Rabbi your dad and Rabbi Peter, who's in the front. In that order, you can keep your hands down. Go on.
I'm looking at the
previous resolution. No, that.
אבל הוא לא מכיר את כל הקידושין, הוא כותב, כבוד הרב.
Very dangerous to get into this system.
כבוד הרב, אני קראתי את תשובתו של רב משה פיינשטיין. הוא כותב שם שמה שהוא מתיר זה את הילדים, זה ספק ממזר, אבל אפילו לגט אני מצריך אותה בגט. אני יש לי את התשובה וקראתי את התשובה. זאת אומרת שקידושים שנעשו על ידי קונסרבטיביים הוא לא כל כך בטוח שאין שני עדים כשרים. בפרט היום אני אראה לכבודו הרבה מתפללים בבית הכנסת קונסרבטיבי שומרי שבת, אני אראה לכבודו, אין להם בית הכנסת אחר והם הוזמנו לחתונה, אז מה החתונה תופסת? אם יש שני עדים וראו את הנתינה והוא אמר לה הרי את מקודשת לי, לא צריך לומר אתם עדי בעדי קידושין, מספיק ששניים ראו את זה. ומה שרב משה פיינשטיין לא פסל אותם לגמרי, הוא אמר כך, מצטמא וגם את הילדים אני מכשיר, אפילו שלגט אני הייתי מצריך אותה גט, ככה הוא כותב. אם אנחנו נוצא בתקנה אולי אפשר לעקור את זה כבר כתקנת הקהל, כמו שמציע תשבט, כמו שמציע הגאון הריבש. הרבה מהגאונים הספרדים השתמשו בזה במצרים לבטל קידושין שנעשו שלא במסגרת דיוק ההלכה שהם ביקשו, למשל שיהיה הרב המקדש, שיש שני עדים שלהם בעשרה אנשים ועוד ועוד ועוד. אני אומר, אם אנחנו נצא בתקנה כזאת אתה מקלקל אפילו אם יש שני עדים כשרים, אפילו כמובן לא לפי הרמה שאומר חיישנה, אבל אם הוא לא רוצה לתת גט שלא ניתן את הגט. גם הרמה לא אמר שזה קידושין ודאיים. זה הרעיון שאני חושב אם תצאו, ואני דיברתי עם הרב הראשי שהיה פה ואמר זה רעיון טוב שתצאו בעיתונים, למשל בג'ויש פרס ועוד כמה עיתונים, שיהודי דתי לא ילך לקידושין כאלה, ממילא כל הקידושין שלהם כבר יהיו לא שווים, ואם הוא הלך הוא גם ייתן. הרב הראשי שהיה פה הציע גם את ההצעה. אני חושב שזה רעיון טוב שאנחנו צריכים להתארגן, להתלכד, לצאת בדעה, ולעולם לא נפתור את כל הבעיות כבוד הרב, אבל חלק, כמו שאמרנו, תמיד יהיה מחלוקת, אבל לעזור קצת. הרמב״ם זה לא טוב? האם כבוד הרב לא יקבל אישה שהתגרשה בתימן שהם נהגים לפי הרמב״ם, אתה לא תתיר אותה? זה המנהג שלהם, קיבלנו את זה. זה בעיה, צריך לעשות. אולי כדאי. זה רעיון טוב. אני דיברתי עם הרב הראשי, הוא מסכים לרעיון הזה. עכשיו דורון, כן, כן. כן, אבל אולי אפשר למצוא גם לכל הרבנים כאן, רוב הרבנים הם אשכנזים שהם הולכים בשיטת הרמה, יותר קל. כבוד הרב, כן, בבקשה, תגיד שהיה לי עוד לדבר, אבל הגיע הזמן, אני מצטער, אני מברך אותה.
דרכו ברוך של רבי בן חיים, I'm sure he'll be available. Rabbi Ben Chaim will be available here for a few minutes to stay, but Zanko Baruch, thank you very much. Unfortunately, the time is up. There's much more for him to say. The next session will begin in approximately 10 minutes.
In the interest of time, we can just be seated so that we can begin the session. I found it interesting and useful that I was not given any information before I arrived to the convention as to the session that I was going to be introducing, but I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that I was introducing and presiding over the session. Our guest speaker is a chaver of mine. We had the opportunity to study together in Yeshiva, and it's a wonderful opportunity to be together with my friend Rabbi Schwartz. And by not knowing what the subject matter was, I wasn't able to prepare an introduction to him. You're all spared. Because the most important thing right now is to listen to this very erudite lecture. I know it will be so because Rabbi Schwartz is one who is a wonderful Magid Shir, very steeped in the subject matter that he's going to speak on. So without any further ado, I want to introduce our speaker now, Rabbi Alan Schwartz of Congregation of Tzedek in Manhattan, who will speak on the very important issue of balancing Pshat and Drash in the commentaries of Rashi, and Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban, dealing with the Rishonim and Chazal, and the Koch HaDrush, but also being able to do it so that being able to conduct a Rav, being able to conduct himself in such a manner that one still maintains a certain sense of fealty and devotion to the traditional text. Rabbi Schwartz.
Thank you very much, Larry. You all know as Rabbanim, whether giving shir or giving drushes, lo amidrush ha'ikara la ha'maistala, but the fact is that when giving drush in a drusha or in class, what students or congregants appreciate most is to first and foremost explain what the simple pshat of this pasuk is. Now pshat, like drash, is going to be subjective. I will mention a few psukim here, give you a few perushim, and some people in the room might say, no, this is pshat. Other people in the room might say, no, this is pshat. The fact is, though, that pshat is much more objective than drash is. Pshat is given to strict rules. It must resort to the grammar, to the context, to the syntax, to a number of rules that drash is not constricted to. If Hashem is instructing Moshe how to speak to Bnei Yisrael as they're cornered by the Yamsuf, and Moshe tells them, Hashem yilochem lochem v'atem tacharishun, and you find a medrash in Chazal that understands that to mean God will make bread for you, but you must still plow. Nice drash. Fits. You can teach your people wonderful messages that Moshe meant to tell Bnei Yisrael at the Yam that God is waiting for you to do something here. However, anyone with eyes in his head can see that that is not the simple meaning of what Moshe meant to impart. If I may simplify the machlokes between pshat is and what drash is, pshat is what the pasuk says. Drash is what the pasuk teaches. And I would like to show through a careful study of the four major Rishonim how we can balance pshat and drash, not only in the classroom, but in the drasha. And you'll see about... I think it's wrong to say Rashi was right and Ibn Ezra was wrong as far as how they give pshat to the pasuk. I think it's a mistake for Machanech to say that in the first place, but the fact is that Rashi and Ibn Ezra approached the psukim from a very different angle, and that is why you often have a steady machlokas between the two of them, and it's always a wonderful service both to congregants and to students to show the Ramban afterwards and how Ramban balanced both and showed that there is hardly ever a tension between pshat and drash that you'll find in Ibn Ezra or Rashbam, and how Ramban very often delivers for you the drash of Rashi with a pshat twist to it. So allow me to now run through a number of makoros. There are over 100 makoros that I prepared. This is for your use. I will at times run through 10 makoros and only do one of them. So this is, please take this with you and use it when necessary. The first 22 makoros I will not do inside at all, because these are makoros that are indicative of Chazal's approach to pshat and drash. It's interesting, in Ibn Ezra's introduction to a grammar book he wrote called Safa Barura, he says that Chazal knew how to give a good pshat, but it's the Rishonim who messed things up. And I have to bring it back to the pshat that Chazal was familiar with. Rashbam, in his introduction to Parshas Vayeshev, says something very different. Rashbam says that mitoch chassidusam, because of the chassidus of all the Rishonim, up to my own grandfather Rashi, people only studied the Tanakh from the standpoint of Pshat and Midrashim, so therefore they don't know how to learn a good Pshat. The fact is, Ein Mikra Yosei Midei Pshuto is only mentioned 3 times in all of Pshat. Pashtei Dekra B'Maisiv, another 5 times. One can make a good argument from the side of Rashbam that if you only saw the Pesukim of Tanakh through the eyes of Chazal, you will not have an appreciation for Pshat. That's Rashbam's opinion. Ibn Ezra says otherwise. Probably familiar with the 18th letter of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and the 19 letters of Ben Uziel, all these Makoros here in the first 22 sources, where he complains of the status of the study of Tanakh and Pshat in general in the yeshivas in Germany, and he blames this, the fact that Tanakh is rendered an orphan status, he blames it on Rabbeinu Tam, famous Taitzvist in Sanhedrin and in Kiddushin, where he says that we no longer have to study the Nevi'im and Ksuvim and Mishnah because it's already Belula B'Mikra, Belula B'Mishnah, Belula B'Talmud. That the Talmud Bavli is already a semantical connection between Bavel and Balul and the Torah, so Talmud Bavli is a mixture of Tanakh. So you don't have to study Tanakh, like Chazal said, Lola Mishalei Shodom, third Mikra, third Mishnah, third Talmud. You already have your Mikra in Talmud Bavli, so Rabbeinu Tam, that's Rashbam's younger brother, not only apparently carried the day when it came to halacha with respect to his brother Shmuel, but also carried the day when it came to the study of Mikra. Rabbeinu Tam said, don't study so much. Rashbam, again in his Akdamah to Parshas Vayesha, complains that people aren't studying enough Tanakh. And Rabbeinu Tam carried the day, and Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch in his 18th letter says that it's Rabbeinu Tam's fault to this day that we don't study enough Mikra. With due kavod to Rav Hirsch, this is not Rabbeinu Tam's fault. Rabbeinu Tam, although it doesn't cite it, is actually quoting a Maimar Chazal in Kohelet Rabbah. In the Pasuk, Kol Nachalim, Holchim, all the Nachalim go to the same place. There's a Maimar Chazal that says, and it's brought down here, that all of our study should go towards Talmud and not towards the study of Mikra. So whoever's fault it is, you should also be aware of the fact that Rashi, who revolutionized the study of not only Torah but Nevi'im and Ketuvim, writes in the Gemara in Brachas that Rabbi Eliezer was advising his children, Al Targilum b'mikra yoser midai kivan d'moshcha. Don't let your students study too much Tanakh, it will drive them away from their other more important studies. Yet Rashi says in his Perush to the end of Shmos, you're quoting now a Gemara in or some Rishonim who explain why the Kohen Gadol would dafka teach stories of Daniel or Divrei Yamim. Some say because it is Aramaic as a sign of the Amaratus of the Kohen Gadol. Some say because they have stories of the Moshech. There's a Gemara in the Perek called Kisvei that says that they would study Ksuvim at Mincha time on Shabbos to get the Amaratim out from drinking too much Shabbos afternoon. That's what we say about Anis Tfilas Tfilas Hashem Eis Ratzon when we take up the Torah Mincha, because David says that Pasuk right after talking about people drinking. So that's a reminder that we should be studying Mincha time. So anyway, but the Gemara in Kol Kisvei also says Mishum Demashcha, stories in Ksuvim are Mosheich. It's all right. The stories in Tanakh are Moshech, but the students that say, "Oh, this is much more interesting than the Shiv Shmeitzer." So let me study this. So it's much more. I call it, instead of interesting, excuse me, much more engaging. Let's call it engaging for more Moshech for the common person. Yet Rashi in the end of Shmos says that anyone who wants to call himself a Talmud Chacham, Tzorach Liot Baki Bechof Dalit Sfarim. When I start my introduction to Bible class at Yeshiva University, I always look around the room and I say, chances are that everyone in this room can tell me the basic storyline of Peter Pan, of Pinocchio, of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, of Cinderella, of any assortment of such stories. Yet how many people in this room, I'm not putting you in the spot here, how many people in this room, I say in my classroom, can tell me what Habakkuk is about, where Nahum came from, the major theme of Sefer Tzfanya. So who is Sheva ben Bichri, Shimi ben Gera? Tell me about them. I put the students in the first year at YU on the spot like this, and they,
they're embarrassed to know that they know more baseball teams than they know books of Tanakh. So Shimshon Perlhorst complained about this, or Shpam complained about this. So let's now, after convincing you that we need to teach our children more Tanakh, there's no excuse for our children to have 12 to 16 years of Jewish education and not leave all of that Jewish education knowing Tanakh. No excuse. The 1,024-page book in the Koran Tanakh. So, let them, people should know. Our students should know all of Tanakh. Ad kan, the machlokes between Rabbeinu Tam and Rashbam. Now let's go at the Makoros of Rishon. Rashi did not write an introduction to his Perush al HaTorah, as opposed to almost all other Rishonim did. However, most scholars consider the source number 23. It says Rashi, Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban, source number 23, to find that they're in order, to be Rashi's introduction to the Torah. Per Gimel Pasuk Ches and Bereishis, Rashi says, Yesh Midrashei Agadah Rabim, Ukfar Sidrum, Rabosenu, Amachonam, the Bereishis Rabba, Bashar Midrashos, Va'ani, this is his introduction, one line, Va'ani lo basi elo lukshuto shel mikra, ula agadah hamiyashevet zibre mikra, davar dabur al hosanav. You're familiar with this. Rashi says it's often in his Perush. There's a machlokas between the Meforshim of Rashi. There are over 300 Perushim written to Rashi. There's a machlokas between the Meforshim to Rashi. Whether Rashi is always shot unless he says Kach Midrasho, or whether Rashi is always Drash unless he says Zeb Shuto. Ad kan, the very wide spectrum in how to understand Rashi. I'll leave that to your own subjectivity. So Rashi says, I am first and foremost here to give you pshat, and then Agadah Miyashevet Divrei Mikra, the important word here is Miyashevet. I will only introduce Agadah if there is a text that needs Yishuv. So whenever you find Rashi give a drash, when pshat should have sufficed, you must look into the pasuk and say, not just Makto Shela Rashi, what did Rashi see in the pasuk that made him give this Agadah? On the pasuk Birchos Shadayim Varechem, Rashi cites Targum Onkelos, and Rashi does not blindly cite Targum Onkelos. There are at least 100 Perushim of Rashi in the Torah where he says something La'afuke Targum Onkelos about three quarters of the time actually saying so, a quarter of the time just saying something that you, if you read Targum, you see Rashi is against Targum. We'll talk about Rashi's relationship to Targum shortly, but on the pasuk Birchos Shadayim Varechem, three very easy words, Rashi says Birchos Da'aba U'De'ima, Birchos Av Va'ein. The word Shadayim, according to Rashi in his Perush to Vayechi, means a blessing to men to be able to father children. Shadayim is not a difficult word. It is not a Mikra Shetzorach Yishuv. What did Rashi see in the pasuk? I'm giving an example. We can give hundreds of examples. The answer is that this is indeed a Mikra Shetzorach Yishuv, but you must have Rashi's encyclopedic mind more than a concordance. Rashi has much more than that. Rashi has a computer in his mind. You know that the words Shadayim Varechem appear in Tanakh five times together, and every time Rechem comes first. And it makes sense. First bless the woman's ability to have the child, then bless her ability to nurse them. When Rashi sees Birchos Shadayim Varechem, Rashi must ingeniously use, as he does, the Aramaic language to show how Shadayim can refer to male fertility, because that precedes Rechem. I want the man to be able to do something that will be able to precede Rechem in the fertility process, and the men will have that bracha. So that Rashi saw a mikvah shetorach yishuv. To us, it goes over our heads many times. Rashi insists on telling you why Yitzchak was blind. The pshat meforshim cry havoc with this Rashi. So, well, who cares why he's blind? He's old. It says, where is it in pshat that makes you insist on telling me why Yitzchak was blind? The answer is very simple. What does Vayihi Zokein Yitzchak Vatichena Einav mean? The same as Vatichena Einav Meraos. Rashi saw this pasuk as saying, Yitzchak grew old and his eyes grew dim from seeing something. Pasuk could have just said his eyes grew dim. So Rashbam and Ibn Ezra did not read the pasuk so closely in order to warrant such reading. So when Rashi says, I'm giving you a Gadol Miyasheves Divrei Mikra, Rashi's gift to us is to show us that the Torah purposely writes, sometimes in an ambiguous way, sometimes in a roundabout way, sometimes in a repetitive way, in order to teach these agadot. And then, Zavor Zavor Lotanav, which is, according to some of Farshei Rashi, a third approach, but I must tell you, it's a pasuk in Mishlei, it's not. Zavor Zavor Lotanav means a word fitly spoken. It means that when I give you pshat, or I give you an agadot, when you look at the pasuk, Rashi's not bragging here, he's just saying, when you look at the pasuk, you'll come back to me and say, yes, that is the davor, that the davor, that the Torah wants to be davor alotanav, that it fits, it's fitly spoken, it fits the words exactly. Now sometimes there's a problem with that. Sometimes it fits too exactly, as Rashbam and Ibn Ezra point out often. Now what I have before you are five different categories of when Rashi will introduce a drash when pshat seems to suffice. The first is, the biblical text must be significant. Now of course the biblical text is significant, is it not? Not according to Rashbam or Ibn Ezra every time. When it says Vayistrotzitzu Abanim B'Kirbo with respect to Rivka and what she didn't even realize with two children inside of her, Rashi insists, take a look at 24, Al Korcha Hamikra Zemer Dershuni. What do you mean that you must say, you must darshan these words? Look at number 25, I just wrote it out in my hand. Shehayu Ratzimu Mitznanim B'Sof Gufa K'derech Ubrim, Rashbam says. What's the Mikra Shesorech Yishuv here? When there's one child, a woman is very likely to feel pain. Kalvachoma when there are two children, as different as Yaakov and Esav were. Rashi insists that there is a struggle going on inside Rivka between two children with intelligence, much to the exception of a Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin that insists that this cannot happen. Remember the Machlokas Rebbe and Antonina, which Rashi quotes later, and yet Rashi contradicts Rebbe's conclusion that children do not have a Yetzer Hara before birth. Rashi insists that there is a machlokas between the two of them, or that they're fighting over two worlds, or that they're running for Avodah Zarah, because Rashi apparently wasn't sure what the word Vayistrotzitzu means, whether the Shorish was Rasat, which means to fight, or Roots, which means to run. So Rashi gave you two Perushim, one capturing the meaning of fighting, one capturing the meaning of running, to see it inside. However, why didn't Rashi explain, like Rashbam said, that the boys aren't fighting? It goes against our sense perception that unborn boys can fight, and against the Gemara. What is Rashi doing? What I believe Rashi is doing here in this instance is he's making the text what we call omni-significant. It is insignificant for the Torah to just say that Rivka is experiencing pain because that is the normal pain of a pregnant woman, which Rashbam is satisfied in hundreds of occasions to leave us with. When Ibn Ezra in his Perush to Rut writes in Perek Gimel, when it says Vayike Efos Sa'orim, he writes, once a man came to me and said, what does Vayike Efos Sa'orim mean? And I told him that's how much she carried home. Ibn Ezra, no woman can carry an Efa of Sa'orim, that's 36 liters of Sa'orim, which even if Ruth was strong enough to carry, must have been a tremendous bulk. So Vayike Efos Sa'orim in Chazal is meant to be some kind of simon, like the Sheish Sa'im that he gave her elsewhere. So, which is also too heavy for her to carry. So the Sheish Sa'orim, if it's Sheish Sa'im. So so that's Ibn Ezra satisfied to leave the text insignificant. That's the way it was, that's the way it's reported. Why does Hashem tell Moshe to go down Hinei Yotzei HaMaima to meet Paro? Ibn Ezra satisfied to say, because kings like to walk near water, it's very pleasant to do in the morning. But Shabbos, what are you telling me? To Rashi, a text cannot be rendered so insignificant. Oh, pregnant women sometimes suffer. Why is Rivka given editorials to tell us what it feels like to what any pregnant woman, let's say with twins, endures? So with the fact that the Torah tells me this is what's significant to Rashi. Not so much what does it mean that Yaakov was holding on to Esav's heel. What does it mean that the Torah cares to tell me this fact? So that this is an important element in Rashi, and the Ramban often attributed monumental significance to the simple biblical text. If you read source 27, he puts the words down exactly. It says, Yisaper ha-katuv v'yarich v'inyan ha-ba'eros v'ein d'pshute ha-sipur so'elet v'lo kavod gadol Yitzchak. What's the reason for that Aliyah in Parshat Toldos about the wells that Yitzchak digs up? He says, I'll tell you something very a great sod nistar, enigmatic, esoteric secrets for the future that is indicative of the three Batei Mikdashim. Now that's Ramban's omni-significance, and he was often critical of Ibn Ezra for not lending significance, as I just mentioned, on the pasuk Vayelach Ish Mibeit Levi Vayikach Es Bas Levi, in a running attempt of all that we've shown him to explain why the word Vayelach is there. Why didn't the pasuk just say Vayikach Ish Mibeit Levi Es Bas Levi? And the best gifts we can give to our students when analyzing Pshuto Shel Mikra is to say, what does the pasuk say? Now, how could the pasuk have said the same thing in a more simple manner? And now tell me why the pasuk adds this extra word. Vayelach ish mibeis levi vayikach es bas levi could have just as well have been vayikach ish mibeis levi es bas levi. So what's the vayelach doing there? So one perish brought down in Rashi is halach ba'atas bito. You should read the pasuk vayelach ish mibeis levi achar atas bito vayikach es bas levi. Ibn Ezra doesn't like that. That's inserting something into the pasuk that's not there. That's drash. Ibn Ezra says that before Amram married Yocheved, he traveled. What? He traveled? That's what the Torah is using that extra word for, to tell me that he traveled? He says, Imkein Matzorach Bazeh. Why would the Torah tell me this insignificant fact? So this is rule number one in Rashi. The text must be significant. At the top of page 5, I have a list of Rashi's and Ibn Ezra's and Ramban's, where Rashi quotes the Drash, Ibn Ezra objects because it's Drash, and Ramban shows why Rashi is right in his objection to Ibn Ezra's objection. Number 2, the biblical text should not be inconsistent. That's obvious. I wouldn't stand for an article being inconsistent, an article, a newspaper. Surely the Torah shouldn't be inconsistent. However, you will notice in many cases where Rashi points to an inconsistency that there are other pshat and aforshim, sometimes Rastadigon, sometimes Rashbam, sometimes Ibn Ezra, who do what any philosopher knows is better than solving any problem, is to show that there is no problem. Rashbam goes the extra mile to show that there is nothing wrong in the pasuk. For instance, Vayera Vayivoker Yom Echad. I'm not here to talk about Rashbam's chiddush about whether the day starts in the morning or at night. That'll be for a shir about Karaites and their use of pshat. But Rashbam, we'll see later, was very independent in his pshat, much more than Ibn Ezra. And on this pasuk, Rashi says, "Lefiseder Lashon Aparsha Hayela Luchtov Yom Rishon." And we have a drasha of the fact that it says Echad, not Rishon. Drasha is built upon the anomaly. It's built upon the abnormal. It's built upon the inconsistent. However, wouldn't you like a perush to say, I collected 10 places in Tanakh where Rishon is actually used as Echad, where Echad is interchangeable with Rishon many times in Tanakh? Right in the next perek, Shem HaNahar HaEchad Pishon, Shem HaNahar HaSheni Gichon. Right in the next parak it says the word Echad again, meaning first. Wouldn't it be a better perush to say, many people thought this is a problem? It's not. I don't know, maybe I'll have a chance to explain later why Rashi usually does not do that, but I'll ask your opinions. I said that Pshat and Drash is subjective. I won't elaborate on this. You all know sources 30, 31, etc., where Rashi derives that the men and women were separated on the Teva. Rashi not only derives that from the text, but he even offers a motive. He suggests that because Mifnei Sheha'olam HaYashurui B'Tsar, men and women were separated. And we know that because when they ascend the Teva, they go separately, the Noach and his sons, his wife and his sons' wives. When they descend, they go Noach, his wife, his sons, his sons' wives. Okay. Also, source number 34, when B'nai Reuven and Gad ask for land on the other side of the Yarden, they say that we'll build fences for our cattle and cities for our children. And then after a long soliloquy, when Moshe tells these two tribes about their obligations, he says, no, you're making a big mistake. Build fences for your children, build cities for your children, and fences for your cattle. Did you capture the quotes? Inconsistency here, right? So Rashi says, Chasim hayu al mamonam yusim ibnehem, let's not say him. Sheikdimu miknehem letapam. They put their parnasa before their children, so Moshe corrected them and said, no, do it this way. Now, this is a wonderful exercise, even in the grade school class, is to first, of course, teach at length the meaning of this inconsistency, what Rashi derives from it, and then to ask, do you think that both of these derivations of Rashi are drash? Do you think both of them are pshat? Or do you think one of them is more pshat than the other? Very often you'll say, but in this case, the drash is the pshat. Good, that is the approach of the Malbim and the Ksav HaKabbalah and many other Achronim. I must stress not the approach of Rashi. Right? Rashi will say it's either pshat or drash. To say that the pshat is the drash is always the pshat is the derech of the Malbim and many achronim, but not Rashi. Fine. When Rashi says something like pshuto kemashma'o or in the current term pshuto mashma'o, you know that that's bound to be in a book where Rashi feels pshat is drash, and I'll explain when I get up to his haftamah to share shirim. But in this instance, I would say without I would like to get some of your participation, but there's so little time. My impression is, and this is after a long survey of speaking to students, is that the Noach pasuk is drash. Tashmish amita mandachar shmei. We're talking about Tashmish in this pasuk. It's drash. It doesn't mean that it's not historically true. Drash is more important than pshat. Even Rashbam agrees in ascertaining halacha, etc. But just because something is drash doesn't mean it's not historically true. The pasuk, however, with Moshe, I am more inclined to say that that's pshat, because Moshe, in his soliloquy, is talking about family values. The family values, mandachar shmei, yes, someone mentioned that. But Tashmi Shemitah is further away from the pasuk by Noah than the message is by Moshe, and it's always a service to our congregants when we say a good drash to first either say the pshat of the pasuk, or to explain how the drash, no matter how remote, fits in the context of the story. Remember what I opened with? Hashem Yilochem Lochem, God will make bread for you, Vatem Tachrishun, you must plow. That message fits the storyline. Hashem was waiting for a Nachshon to jump in, to do something. I'll make the bread for you, I'll fight for you. But you have to do something first. Right? If I want to teach people to make self-sacrifice, and I say, Hevel Hevi Gam Hu, Minchal Hashem. So that's why Hevel was received more than Kayin. He brought himself. So no one's going to accuse that of being shot. But Shivim Panim LaTorah, and if it's a Devor Devor Lofanov, it fits the meaning of the words, I can extract this from the meaning of the words, then that would be fine. More examples of this appear on this page. Let's move on to source number 38. The biblical text should be read closely. Vayivlam Mateh Aharon, Rashi insists, Me'achar shechazav natseh mateh fala es kulon. Rashi says that staff ate staffs in the story in Shmot. Ibn Ezra says, he quotes a Rabbi Yeshua. Ibn Ezra quotes Rashi in his Perush al Torah once, and he quotes things Rashi says scores of times, often in the name of other people, sometimes even Karaites. Ibn Ezra did not use Rashi's Perush al Torah. He said so in his Akdamah to the Book of Grammar I mentioned before, Safa Brura, that source is here. Ibn Ezra is probably the only major parshan of the last 850 years who wrote a perush to the Torah without having Rashi write something. He often says things that are exactly like Rashi without attributing it to Rashi, something no one else does. In any event, Ibn Ezra quotes this Rashi and says, I think this is too great a miracle. The Torah says a snake ate snakes. But it says, Vayibla Mateh Aharon. So, when the Nazir finishes his Nazirship, the Torah says, "V'achar yishte ha-nozir yayin." He's not a nozir anymore. Still calls him a nozir. So here, the Torah calls it a mateh, even though it's a nochash. Ibn Ezra suggests these arguments, but Rashi says, "Well, I'm reading the pasuk that's there. Vayivla mateh aharon, that's what's there." Okay. So this is a trend that continues. I think that one can call the discussion with respect to biblical parallelism that I have later, actually, with Rashbam, an offshoot of this. What does HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim mean? It can't mean this month to you is the first of the month. Because then what does the rest of the pasuk teach? Rishon Hu Lochem L'Chodshei Hashana. Rashi cannot suffer a pasuk just repeating itself. If you read the pasuk closely, I don't want to have Klomar in the middle of a pasuk. What does Ve'asaras HaShemayim mean, the Gemara in Tainus says? It won't rain? It can't mean that. Why not? Lo Yematar. What do you mean, Ve'asaras HaShemayim, Klamar, Lo Yematar? What is it? If you look carefully at the Gemara in Daf Yud and Brachos, when it says, Yitamu Chatoi Min Ha'aret, you know what Bruri insists that they're talking about sins, not sinners? Because she says, Shpil Atzmei L'Sefer Dekra, U'Rishoyim O'Deinam. How can you have Yitamu Chatoi Min Ha'aret, and then U'Rishoyim O'Deinam? first statement to her husband is as much an aversion to biblical parallelism as it is a philosophy about praying for the redemption, the personal redemption of sinners. So that she's arguing that David wouldn't repeat himself like this. Now, you all know the Radak in Tehillim, where he puts forth his opinion of biblical parallelism. Even before him, Rashbam, in his Perush al HaTorah, who talked about Kefal HaInyan B'Milim Shonot, that there are psukim in the Torah, Shnei Goyim B'Vit Neich, B did not add anything that A didn't say. That's an opinion of some Rishonim, not the general opinion of Rashi. However, Rashi in one Perush in the Shira Tayam lists 15 psukim in Tanakh that have biblical parallelism, and he says, and that's how Tanakh talks. So, did Rashi change his mind later in life? Was Rashi the influence on Rashbam that the Torah speaks in biblical parallelism? On the Pasuk, Achodesh Hazel Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, Rashi says that Achodesh Hazel means that when the moon looks like this, Lachem Beis Din, it's Rosh Chodeshim. And so we have the Sheet in the Gemara, the two brothers can be a Beis Din for, to take Kileges for Kiddush Achodesh, because two brothers were the first Beis Din. So Rashi allowed for such a Perush, because if that's not what the beginning of the Pasuk means, then what does the end of the Pasuk mean? But, you know the Rashi, afterwards he says, the Pasuk repeats itself. I would like to submit to you that whenever Rashi admits to biblical parallelism, very rare, I would like to submit to you that that's a late Rashi. Rashi, in his early years, until he was old enough to know Rashbam well, did not ascribe to biblical parallelism, as 95% of his Perushim point to. However, later in life, when being confronted with Rashbam's argument, there is a Rashbam al HaTorah that talks about this. It's in this course here. Rashbam says, my grandfather argued with me many times about Pshuto Shel Mikra. And he admitted later in his life that if he had more time, he would have to redo his Perushim to fit the Chidushim HaPshotos HaMetchachos B'chol Yom, i.e. to be more like my Perush. Rashbam was only 16 when Rashi died. So this is significant. Rashbam lived to be 96. You can picture the great influence. So, but not as great as his brother. So the biblical text should be read closely. That's also a great gift of Rashi. When it says, V'techayena es hayeladim, with respect to the midwives and the boys in Shmos Perek Aleph, Rashi says, Misafkot lohem mayim umazon. Rashi, where do you get that? Why don't you say about the Chayin and Teledim, like most Pashtunim, they let them live. I'm getting to Targum Unkelos shortly. I don't think that Targum Unkelos, or any Gemara by that, for that matter, is a blind enough reason for Rashi to say anything. Must fit the Vor Devor Alofnov. If you want, I can give you some examples of this right now, but Rashi will quote Unkelos and agree with Unkelos if it fits Achar Yishuv HaMikro, which 95% of the time it does. And Rashi disagrees with Unkelos, it's because it does not fit the Yishuv HaMikra. I'll give some examples shortly. The reason for this is because V'lo Shamu Kasher Diber Aleihem Paro Melech Mitzrayim already means that they let the boys live. What does Vatachena Seladim mean? Please, we will find in many times where Rashi gives a drash that it's because of a phenomenon of the sort that I just mentioned. Let's look at number 4, source number 40. The paper should try to capture the mashma'ut of the word. Very important. We all know what Pshat and Drash is, but we're not sensitive enough to the value of Mashma'ut in the Parshanut of Rashi. It is not necessary in the Parshanut of Rashbam or Ibn Ezra, but crucial in the study of Rashi, and I'm referring to something I heard before here, that in the Zakdama to Shir Hashirim, Rashi writes, "In mikra yotzei de pshuta umashma'o." Mashma means the verbal meaning of the word. I'll go right into some examples, and then I'll explain why Rashi added the word mashma'o, which is not part of the original Maimar Chazal found in Yevamos and Shabbos. It's mashma'o Rashi added himself, and I'll say why shortly. Dafkan Shir Hashirim, and I'll get to the Pshat Drash issue we mentioned before. On the pasuk B'ni B'chori Yisrael, source number 47. No, when I said 40 before, I meant 46. On the pasuk B'ni B'chori Yisrael, this is the first thing, number 47, that Moshe said to Paro. Rashi says Lashon Gidulah, commenting on the word B'chori. Kimo Afani B'chores Nei Zeu Pshuta. That pasuk is in Tehillim, where David calls himself a bechor. David is not a bechor. So the word bechor does not necessarily fit its regular mashma'ut, meaning firstborn son, male child of a father or mother. Now, if Moshe had gone into Paro and started talking about Yaakov and Esau, this is a good opportunity to teach children the difference between Pshat and Drash. As much as it's in Perish Rashi, as much as it's a Maimar Chazal, 95% of which is what's comprised of Perish Rashi, as much as this is the a Maimar Chazal, it's not the Pshat. Because it's beyond our sense perception that Moshe would go in to start talking about Yaakov and Esau. So why does Rashi record it? This is an essential question to be armed, to have in your grips, to explain why Rashi would record such a perush, and not just because it appears in Chazal. I can give you a contextual reason of why it's important that Yaakov is the Bechor and not Esau. Dafka et Yetzias Mitzrayim. Esau never relinquished his right to the Bechorah, like Yishmael did to Yitzchak. So the only thing that proves that Yaakov is Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov and not Avraham Yitzchak Esav is Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Hashem promised Avraham Yedoah Tzedak Yigeri Azarachem. So it's Dafka at Yetzias Mitzrayim that you can say Kan Kol Sam HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that doesn't fit the Peshat. It's inconceivable that Moshe told that to Paro. So what is Rashi doing? Any thoughts? Yes?
In recording this in the Torah, in this way, he's meaning for the reader.
Okay, excellent point. Rashi made the point and used the point that someone can be saying something to the person involved in the story and another thing to generations of Klal Yisrael who will be learning messages from this. Excellent point. Whether that is true, whether I can say that that's true about Rashi's intention, I feel more comfortable saying that that was true about Chazal's intention. Whether that's true about someone's intention who writes in the beginning of his Peirush, Rani lo bosi lo pshut or shomikra, that I don't know if I can take the leap. It is. I think it's very, very possible, even likely. But I would prefer to say, such as in this example, that Rashi noticed that the first Peirush did not adequately capture the meaning of the word Bechor. That's all. So Rashi had to give you a Peirush. He looked through his Chazal's computer, and he saw that I found a Peirush of the word Bnei Bechor Yisrael, where the word Bechor does capture the mashma'ut, the verbal meaning of the word Bechor. Now I'm treading on safer ground when it comes to what Mahayah Kavanat Rashi. Okay? Paro that about Yaakov and Esau? Okay, well that's the double meaning that we were shipping upon the Matorah. Fine. But in other words, that Moshe means one thing to the person he's talking to, another thing for a generation of readers. That's fine. I feel more free saying that about Chazal than about someone who's insistent on Pshat. But I would just like to point use this as an example for Rashi's Redifas Hamashma'ut. He wants the words of the pasuk to fit the meaning of the entire phrase to fit the words of the simple meaning of the words. And to be sure, this is something you should note between Rashi on one side, Ibn Ezra on another side. Ibn Ezra is satisfied with explaining a pasuk, saying, well, you see, the word means this in Eos, so they're good, that's what it means here in the Torah. Rashi doesn't like to play games like that. You very rarely see Rashi do that. If he does it here, by bringing this pasuk from Tehillim, where Bechor means an important person. No. Rashi, that would have been enough for Ibn Ezra, not enough for Rashi. Rashi likes to give you a perush that captures the usual, normal, average meaning of the word. Yes? Absolutely. Rashi is a careful, close reader of every word. Why Bechor? If it's the first Perush, why didn't he write B'nei HaChashuv Yisrael? Make it easier for us. So therefore we have both Perushim, and Pshat and Drash is not at odds with each other here. See, Ben Ezra, this is a tangle. So Rashi, this is beautiful. This fits well. Okay.